the latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Summer is one of the best times for serious horse players to bet their races. Saratoga and Del Mar are in full swing, along with other top tracks like Gulfstream and Laurel, and ExpressBet puts them all at your fingertips. Plus, ExpressBet customers can play in exclusive tournaments and promotions this summer, and new customers can earn a $500 sign-up bonus. Visit ExpressBet.com today.
Must be 18 years or older and 21 years in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. Racelens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Echobase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats Racelens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
When I said it out loud, it wasn't as strong as it was in my head. I tried not to think about it, so it came back louder. I think it's been about a year since I became a snob. Decided not to play along, so it grew bigger. Me and my head have become very, very, very close. We decided not.
To the top of the hour, James Scully, who we have not spoken to, in maybe at least three weeks, maybe more. What's going on?
Hey, Steve. Yeah, it's been about a month, I think, since like right after the Preakness. But I'm doing well. How are you doing? I guess you're excited being there at Saratoga and opening weekend.
Absolutely, and off to a good start. Little weather wrinkle yesterday, but it didn't. It didn't diminish the day, and we look to a big weekend. But you've got something to be excited about, obviously, the Brilliant Racing team. And you threw in and Steve Margolis and Eskin for it in the Indiana Derby tomorrow.
Yes, definitely. The Brilliant Racing was put together by Brandon Staubel, Joe Christofek, and Natalie Gills. And I think all three of them are smart and talented and hungry and, you know, happy to be part of both the partnership one and two. And Eskin Ford, I think, was the first horse we bought. And, he's always trained well. But I think he was immature. I mean, we had a couple of, races where the jock got off and just said, you know, he was in a good spot. He just quit running. And I think Joe, you know, chronicled it a little bit in an interview he did last week where, I mean, the horse just couldn't even, like, eat peppermints or food out of your hand until here recently. And, you know, it sort of coincided with us dropping him into that maiden 22 starts back. Like, the light bulb came on. He ran a big race that day, you know, really didn't beat much, even though the runner-up came back and won. But last time out, we ran in that starter, that allowance starter, 50,000. and faced a couple older horses. You know, Portal had already won a couple races this year, including a $40,000 claiming race at Keeneland. And Dream Zapper, who was third, was coming off a nice, convincing $40,000 claiming win at Churchill. So they were both multiple winning, like, older horses. We got beat in a really tough photo. He may have lost a little bit of focus when he struck a clear lead in mid-stretch between calls. But once he got engaged by Portal, he re-engaged and galloped out in front. So that 90 burst speed rating got it. Tied for the fourth highest in the field. Really, Mr. Money and Math Wizard are the only two that have run significantly faster than Eskin Florence so far. And we just think he's, you know, he's improving. He's moving forward. And, you know, might not be good enough to win, but we would love to, you know, hit the board.
Well, you got to head up, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's about a three-hour trip. It looks like, you know, getting back like at 2 a.m., but, yeah, that's the game plan.
Well, you, the other option, of course, is to have a big celebration and stay over in Indy, and you know, that could happen just as easily. Let's get some ideas. The card itself, I haven't had a chance, you know, other than after the draw, to talk about the Oaks and the Derby on Tuesday. Bill Downs was with us, and you know, we were speculating, and pretty much everybody that we speculated upon pretty much showed up. And so 11 horse field in the Derby, an overflow capacity field in the Oaks. Let's start with the Derby. And obviously you mentioned Eskin for it, seven, where's the seven, and is 20-1. The two horses to start the conversation with, though, James, Mr. Money, your 6-5 favorite from the 11 hole, and Math Wizard from the 10. I'm sorry. I don't have to love either of them from out there.
No, you don't. And I really think you know, the speed in the race is in post six without Always Mining, and I think it would really be in the best interest of John Court on the 9, Long Range Toddy, and Edgar Zayas on the 10, Math Wizard, to not make it easy for Gabe to cross over in front, because Mr. Money really, you know, he has good tactical speed. He wants to be up forward. I don't know if they're going to be looking to pull him back and rate like a mid-pack. He's unquestionably gotten really good, Mr. Money has, off those last two races. That 99 and 101 speed ratings are super, are easily, they're the best in the field. But I will say that Matt Wynn really shaped up well for him, where once he put away that long shot pace setter that he was tracking, he just basically, you know, galloped into a clear lead and just rolled home unopposed. And I still think he might prove to be a better one-turn horse, Steve. I love that Pat Day. He clearly loves Churchill Downs. I'm not saying he can't transfer his form elsewhere, but, you know, he broke his maiden there and ran fourth in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile off a maiden win. So that's his favorite track. And, you know, Math Wizard, definitely you got to respect his chances. That was a really good effort, I thought, in that Ohio Derby last time. A long shot to consider, at least underneath, I thought a little bit, was Chess Chief for Dallas Stewart. That race last time, that rear form, I thought, ran a really good race for Romans off the layoff. Had a clear lead, but turning for home, the whole field just, like, bunched up behind him, and Chess Chief was forced to go wide. I thought it was, he finished with good energy and eligible to move forward off that effort. Appears to be going back in the right direction, I think.
What about Grey Magician?
Grey Magician, I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, he's a tough read, you know, off the Derby effort, because he reportedly bled in that performance. You know, it looks like he's training well, and you can't dismiss him. But, you know, really hasn't won since breaking his maiden last year in November. So, to me, he's like a vulnerable type to support for the win.
8-1, and I thought he was dangerous, especially especially drawn there.
Yeah, it is a good post, though, that's for sure.
And having Santana, too. An interesting jock choice, too, for Miller. Let's talk about the Oaks. And big full field and some interesting players, including Chocolate Kisses for Cassie, returning to the main track after a couple of, or at least one turf try.
Yeah, definitely. She and Street Band were both in the Kentucky Oaks. Street Band's making her first start since that race, and Chocolate Kisses is making her first start back on dirt. And, you know, they're definitely both going to take money. I will say I prefer, like, Street Band over Chocolate Kisses from that perspective. But the horse that and I'll mention a couple others in there. Obviously, number 10, With Dignity, Assistant McCrack. And, in fact, that dam, Ivory Express, Empress, has thrown all four of her horses to race with the runners. She's just turning out to be a terrific broodmare. And With Dignity, I think, super impressive last time. It's a really tough post for her, but she just might have the goods in terms of talent. It might be able to really make a big impact, I thought, in that race, just being so sharp off those two wins. But the horse I wound up going with in the field is Kim K. And part of the reasoning is there just isn't much pace in there. I mean, there's some other horses in the field that have raced on the front end, but there's nobody in there that you would say is a need to lead type. And I just think the potential's there for her to get out to a good lead. You know, when she broke her maiden second time out last year in that restricted stake at Los Al, they tried the Alcibiades. It didn't work out. I didn't like her trip when she came back in the flop on May 26th. And I was just super impressed. That was the last week at Churchill, the last Thursday, going a one-turn mile that day. I thought that race really was a good race to build upon. And I just expect her to get a dream trip on the front end with Brian Hernandez.
Let's press back through the sequences. And you got the all-stakes pick four, the 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th. You've also got a pick four that goes with the Mary Hillman George, the 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th. So you got a couple of different choices, a couple of different things on the betting menu that you should take a look at in Indiana. But pressing back from the graded stakes, from the Oaks and the Derby, the General Assembly, and a big full field here going a mile and a 16th. These are fillies and mares.
Yeah, definitely. You know, this is a race where you have the two-horse Lamari, who reeled off four wins in a row, and then last time in that mint julep, she was 4-5, and she missed the break and rushed up wide into the first turn and then settled a little bit off the pace and came with this huge late rally to miss by less than a length. And everybody recognizes that troubled trip and is expecting her to rebound. But, you know, sometimes a race like that can knock something out of a horse. And you know, I've seen so many trip horses over the years not run back to that. And I'm willing to take a shot against her at short odds in this field with number 6, Hannaway Moon. And I thought she really appeared to be moving forward at age 4 this winter when reporting a pair of really strong efforts at the fairgrounds. That race on December 15th, that allowance race she won. Coach Whip was 1-2 in that race. She beat her easily. That filly, Coach Whip, has come back to win a grade 3 and placed in a couple graded stakes. And then last time in that Marie Krantz Memorial, you know, was in a good spot, just got out finished by DeBarra, who's a classy mare, I think was retired off of that win that day. So I just really think that filly has, you know, could receive the proper setup in a race that, yeah, you've got Lamari in there, but there's another just pure, I mean, unbridled class could be the key to, like, perhaps, you know, upspeeding that favorite. Even in Coco Channel could be forward off her last race. So I think Hannah Moon's going to get the right setup in there and run a big race for Cassie off the layoff.
You know, now that you're married, I guess I was going to say it's a cute play, Coco Channel, quote unquote, as opposed to Coco Chanel, and it's an English channel, but that's kind of cute that they like the name caught my eye too. The veterans. You got the 6 that starts the all-stakes pick 4. This one for the boys, mile and a 16th on the grass as well.
Yeah, another race where, you know, I thought there were a lot of different ways to go here. Really competitive cast. All Right comes off a real big second at 71-1 in the Wise Dan. Real Story, arguably the horse to beat off a good fourth to Catholic Boy, will be up there on the front end. Hello, Don Julio comes off a nice win. Might like a little bit more distance, but can't knock him. And even Dot Matrix didn't face the toughest field last time. I was in for an $80,000 tag, but he won that race the right way from off the pace, and he won this Warriors Veterans last year, so we'll be making a title defense for Brad Cox. But the horse I'm going to take in here, 12-1 on the morning line, is number five, Fact Finding. I really think that he's eligible to receive a good trip in here just off the speed. He was up close last time in a really salty allowance with the big changes and Mr. Misunderstood, but that was just sort of the way the race shaped up. He's going to be sitting a little bit further back today and really just needed that race from a fitness perspective, I thought. You know, really showed solid form, I thought, from three turf efforts. Didn't really get back to the grass last year until June, and, you know, one ran second, and then his last start was in August where he was fifth. Something might have happened that day. But came back with a good effort at H5. I'm looking for him to post a minor upset with Julian Leperoux.
Very good. The Mary Holman George.
Mary Holman George. You know, this is a race for My Lady Curlin. You know, they had entered the last weekend at Carter Meadows, going to stop the run here, but I really thought that last race just really was a soft pace, and, you know, it was all off the win, and there's other speed in here, and she's even money on the morning line. I'm not saying she may just win, outclass them for Fox, got a big number last time, but I'm going with Sterling Miss. You know, I like her stretching back to two turns here for Tom Amos. And I'm telling you, Steve, she is coming out of some really salty allowance races. She easily beat one by 4.5 last time over Headland, who, you know, came right back to romp in a Churchill allowance and I think has won 5 or 6 starts this year. Two starts back, that Salt Bay was in great form at Fairgrounds. Divine Queen, you know, seen her win this summer at Churchill, and Honey Bunny, obviously, you know, wound up winning the winning color. So that was a really salty field. And I just think that stretching out for Amos here, she's going to get the right trip from the inside. I think, you know, she's versatile enough to sit just off of it. But if it shakes up right, Corey Lannery might just take it to him. So I'm going to give her a little bit of an edge there at 9-2 on the morning line, Sterling Miss.
Nice. From the rail. And the first stake of the day, the Schaefer.
Yeah, the first stake of the day. I mean, you talk another race, 5 of 8 in this field are listed at 3-1 to 5-1 range on the morning line, including the defending champ, who I wound up going with here. Now, I will mention Thirst for Life, you know, definitely respect his chances. Like to cut back to a mile, 70 yards, ran a big race 2 back. And Todd O'Ready can't be dismissed for Asmussen, but just didn't draw well in post-9. And I'm going to go with Pioneer Spirit. I thought he ran a big race in Oakland Handicap. That was a good field. He faced 2 back in the Oakland Mile. And then last time, just didn't have the best of trips, but it was still a very solid prep. So while he's very tractable, there isn't that much speed in the Michael Schaefer, I didn't think, and I won't be surprised if Bridgemahan just takes it right to him. You know, Bridgemahan and Cox 12 for their last 23 going into yesterday, so red hot tandem.
I love it. We love Bridgemo. Miss not having him here many years as Saratoga, but he's taken advantage of you know, the nice purses, Ellis, and opportunities to ride, you know, for the Kentucky base and the New Orleans outfits, Asmussen and Cox and so forth. So nice. Have a terrific night. Anything else, James?
Yeah, today in the Forbidden Apple, Steve. Let me say to me, Edu, back-to-back stake wins last year. He's a cautionary example of a horse in good form going overseas because he came back, and I just think it knocked something out of him. He was unplaced in his next 5 starts. That was a huge effort last time. I think he's going to move forward off it. I think he's going to be much better at four. I know Voodoo Song's in there. I don't even care about him. I'm taking a G-Doo wire to wire in today's Forbidden Apple.
Interesting.
I mean, Anil's a time I thought ran a really good race there. You know, he's back training for Brown, and he's going to go in some big race, I would imagine. So, I thought that was a really salty race on the Friday of Belmont week. They had also entered him the next day in the poker, and, World Approval just coasted in that race. That race would have completely shaped up differently if he'd run there. But I like the patient approach by using that allowance. And like I said, this son of Frankel, I just think still has plenty of upside. And I think that trip to Ascot last summer knocked him off kilter.
Well, and I haven't actually looked at the workout report, but I will say that if you think back to Todd last week, the way Social Paranoia ran, this is kind of a similar scenario, somebody that, that can either be right on, take the lead if he wants, and we'll see. Lascano, I said this yesterday about Lascano, his tendency to, to maybe want to sit off a little bit, but he's very good on the front end. This comes down to if they confront each other and how much, they begin to spar. They're not the only two horses with speed in here either, James. I mean, there's some other horses that could contribute. And depending on how everybody plays the break, there may be a little bit of a scramble here.
And let me just say this. I mean, Kerban, to me, I was on him big time in that Woodford Reserve or the Old Forester at Churchill. That race last time was awful. I'm worried he's going off form. I know he's one for one at Saratoga. I'm totally against him. If we do get that speed set up, I like your horse. I think he's the one to fear from off the pace, Dr. Mounty from the outside for sure.
Well, and you do get Johnny, who will get some forward position, and depending on the feeling of the course, when you're one advantage under these conditions, outposted horses that have to run out in the 3-4-5 path, you do get the advantage of the crown of either course is invariably got better footing. And there may be horses that struggle to quicken in spots where, the turf is a little sodden. And invariably, if you are a horse that's going to take a bit of an outside stalking path, you do get good footing. And so that is the kind of offsets what some people would perceive as a negative post. I mean, he's still going to have to work out a trip, but Dr. Mounty is going to be a price, and I liked what I saw going into this. Really a fun feature today, and glad that we didn't get so much rain that they had to take everything off the turf, including this grade three. James, best of luck to you and to Margot and the Brilliant Racing team tomorrow. It should be really fun. What a great experience, to be involved in a race like this, so early in the development of the stable. Have fun, and best of luck. We'll talk real soon.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you, Steve.
James Scully, everybody. James_Scully, 111 on your Twitter. Let's take a break. And, of course, at the Twin Spires blog, roll on a regular basis. Let's step away. 1 hour to go. Jay Privman joins us next. Catch up with Jay after he had a nice freshening post-Triple Crown. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions 3 straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
I can't stop shaking. The room has a groove and the floor, it's almost earthquaking. Look what we're making. History out on the floor and it's just awaking. So get that needle in the core. Scratch that back and give me more. You know exactly what I came here for. Back it up and do it again. From the middle to the top to the end.
We're back at the races. Emerald, and delighted after a freshening. Jay Privman, the Daily Racing Form. Jay took a break. I did as well, and he's back. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Steve?
Excellent. And I'm anxious because you and I have not had a chance to talk. I want to hear about the trip.
So, yeah, my wife and I went on a cruise to Alaska. It was absolutely beautiful up there, and just really a nice getaway. I did not purchase the onboard internet package. I didn't want to have the temptation of checking Twitter and email while at sea or in port, and it was just a nice, refreshing getaway. And had some time off on either side of that trip. We spent a couple days in Seattle before the ship left, so it was just a very nice getaway.
Hey,
vacation is not overrated.
Well, I was going to say I remember when my mother went on a fam trip. You know, she was in travel, and she went and did an Alaska thing that included a multi-day cruise too. You know, then you go back to your travel agency and you promote it. But everybody that does this, Jay, everybody that comes back from Alaska says it exceeds expectations and what your perception going in.
Yeah, it's just beautiful up there. I mean, obviously the winters have got to be complete, brutal. But in the summertime up there, you know, the days are long because you're so far north. There was one day where they give you a little newsletter in your cabin every day about what the next day's activities are, and there was one day we were laughing when the extremes of the sunrise was at 3:44 a.m. and sunset was at 10:20 when we were in Skagway, so that was pretty funny. But yeah, just to see the mountain ranges and the glaciers and whales in the water and bald eagles all over the place, and we didn't see any bears. I didn't want to see any on land. I would have been fine seeing some on the shore from the ship, but we didn't see any bears regardless. So that was the one thing that would have been cool to see. But it's just really, really pretty area, and it's just there's not that many people up there, and it's so the amount of land up there and the different waterways are so expansive that there's just so much to see. It was really a nice getaway. And I'm not a cruise person. There's really only two cruises I've ever wanted to do in my life, and that's one of them. The only other one I want to do is go through the Panama Canal. I know some people love it. For me, it's just not something that seems appealing. But I enjoyed it, but it's not something I don't see myself becoming a cruise devotee in my advanced age, but who knows? but for that specific trip, it was great.
Yeah,
it accomplished what I hoped it accomplished, which was a nice freshening. I'm very eager for Del Mar to open next week. The main track opens for training tomorrow. I'm going to go out there, I've been doing a lot of research for the traditional story that I do for the opening day on the two-year-olds to follow, so it's been got the batteries recharged in a good way.
Well, and it was that column, the famous clip and save, was referenced yesterday because Dave had to get his out early for the New York set. Yeah, so those are the two most important columns.
Yeah, no, Dave does. Yeah, I don't think Dave needed to read the paper Thursday because he wrote the paper.
Exactly.
Had about, 15 stories or something? I don't know.
Yeah, it was nuts. It was nuts.
The guys, you think Secretariat was moving like a tremendous machine at Belmont? That's like Dave every day in front of his laptop.
It's funny because what I do in advance of visits, with you and Marcus and everybody, I'll click on your name and it takes you obviously to a page where all the bylines, all the. So I did that on Wednesday, and I just started to laugh myself. I was like, oh my God, Dave has written nonstop, and he had to go home to attend to his mother. God knows what he would have churned out the last couple of days.
Yeah, right. So
unbelievable.
Yep. No, he's invaluable for daily racing for him.
No doubt. And, you swung into action, Jay, upon return. And, really the pressing story and the just infuriating, frankly, story continues to be the way Jerry Hollendorfer is being treated and what he faces here going forward. You reported on it upon your return and about Del Mar's decision-making, and then Steve Anderson yesterday with the wrinkle with Dan Ward sending out horses under his banner.
Right. So Steve had been covering the story while I was away, and then he was off on Monday when I was aware that there was a meeting that was to take place that day between Del Mar officials and Jerry Hollendorfer and several others that it turned out included Hollendorfer's attorney, representatives of the TOC and the CTT. And I reached out to people Monday late afternoon to try and find out what had taken place. And a couple Del Mar officials I reached just said, look, we're not going to say anything on the record about this, and that's our position. And Then on Tuesday morning, Hollendorfer's attorney called me back and told me where things stood as of after that meeting. And so I wrote the news story as to that Hollendorfer was not going to get was not going to be allowed to train horses there. And then it just remained to see what was going to transpire. It seemed like what Steve reported yesterday was the most logical evolution of this process, knowing what we knew as of Tuesday morning. But there was acknowledgement yesterday that Dan Wardle, who's been Hollendorfer's local assistant, will be able to train. It's still not been said, and I don't know if it's even been decided as of this moment, what Hollendorfer's status will be in terms of being able to be, at the track. He also has a very substantial investment from an ownership standpoint in a number of horses in his barn. And, that needs to be resolved as well by the time those horses potentially run on Wednesday. They enter for opening day tomorrow. So there's still a few things that need to be ironed out on that front, but that's where, things stand as of right now, and most of the information that we've been able to glean has been from Hollendorfer's side of things, because as you know, there's been no real public comment per se from Del Mar on this. That's just the tack that they have chosen to take as of now. Who knows, maybe down the line they'll say something, but that's where, thus far, that's what they've chosen to that's the position they've chosen to take.
Well, and of course, New York, the reversal of initially, saying that that they would continue to allow stall space and entry to Hollendorfer, to then reversing that ground. And I had Dave O'Rourke yesterday, and Dave talked about the safety considerations and the overall policies that have been very successful in New York since 2012, since the task force addressed the aqueduct spate of fatalities. Jay, don't you find this just untoward and unfair and odd that somebody that is in good standing from a licensing standpoint, there has not been one good explanation other than, I thought, what Drew Cotto said, which was, concerns over public relations. Is that how we're going to conduct the industry's business from now on?
I mean, that was Drew's impression from the meeting. I talked to a couple of people who were in that meeting, and they did not dispute Drew's perception of things. One thing I think a lot of people don't realize is that, when you have a meeting with a lot of people, even if they don't want to be publicly quoted, they might tell you things on background. So that's what, we know. As you have correctly pointed out, there are no rulings against Jerry Hollendorfer in California, New York, or anywhere else. He has a valid license, and, the tracks have chosen to operate in this way, in the aftermath of the situation that occurred back on June 22nd, when a horse of Hollendorfer's broke down in a training incident during a workout, and that day Santa Anita told him that he needed to be off the grounds in 48 hours, and also that he needed to move his horses off of their property, and that was on June 22nd, which was the penultimate day of Santa Anita's meeting. The Sunday the 23rd was the closing day. So it impacted 2 days of Santa Anita's meet. Hollendorfer has been able to run at Los Alamitos. He was welcomed there by Ben Allred, who owns that track, who, in a statement that Los Alamitos put out, characterized Hollendorfer as being a scapegoat for, that was his word, for the way things had, for all that had transpired in the previous months at Santa Anita. So those are the facts that we know about the situation.
Well, I've been in contact with Cuoto, and if and when he and Jerry would like to address things. I know Jerry is trying to. I mean, he's handled this very gentlemanly, and the misconceptions and the characterizations in some arenas toward him are despicable.
I will say this about Jerry Hollendorfer. He always has conducted himself from a position of not wanting to dump on the game, long preceding what has transpired recently. I'll give you some specific, fairly recent examples. There was a race at Santa Anita. I believe it was the Awesome Again, where there were two horses trained by Bob Baffert in against Shared Belief, and one of them, a long shot, kind of carried Shared Belief out on the first turn pretty significantly, and then another horse came and nearly caught him. And most people who watched that came away with an interpretation of what had transpired. And Hollendorfer publicly chose to not say anything and to just say, we won and we're gonna turn the page. And even in the aftermath of the Breeders' Cup Classic, where again involving Shared Belief, when Byron made a left-hand turn coming out of the gate and compromised Shared Belief, and then Shared Belief was further compromised another furlong into the race by Toast in New York. Even in the aftermath of that, there were a lot of people who, in the Shared Belief camp, who spoke out about it, but Hollendorfer chose publicly not to say anything. He's, even when he has maybe felt wronged, he's never wanted to sully the game publicly. So he's always handled himself that way, and I think that needs to be understood by anybody who, whatever your position is on this specific current situation, is to understand that that's how he has always handled himself in regards to the sport. He also, as you, I know, I'm pretty sure you're well aware, I even wrote about this a few years ago, he started an aftercare facility in Washington mm-hmm. State that Boone McKenna runs, and he made a significant financial investment to get that thing up and running, and it's for both off-the-track race horses, and it's accredited by the TAA, which is extremely important. I like the advertisement that you always run regarding that with Kate and Bradar's voiceover. The Down the Stretch Ranch, downthestretch.org, is something that he founded along with his wife, Janet, and it's for off-the-track race horses, but the main component of it is that it's for veterans who have suffered from or are continuing to suffer from PTSD, and it's been well documented in a number of other types of endeavors like that, the benefit that being around horses can provide to veterans who suffer from that, from PTSD. And he's never been one to, like Jerry Hollendorfer, I'm speaking of now, has never been one to thump his chest or about it, or he's done it quietly, supports it. If you ask him about it, he's happy to talk about it, but he more wants
people to call Boone McKenna,
yep,
and let him get the credit for it. He doesn't want to be the front man for it publicly. I mean, he's proud of it, and he supports it, obviously, and continues to support it, but that's just not how he rolls. And I think a lot of people don't really have a full picture of his personality makeup, and I think if you know a little more, it helps you understand why he has handled things the way he has currently, until now, even though he, I'm sure, is grossly frustrated by the position that he finds himself in. And so I think that's just something that helps hopefully your audience understand, you know, maybe fills in the blanks a little bit and colors in inside the margins a little bit to give you a little fuller picture of the situation and the person involved in this situation.
And I absolutely concur on all elements of this. In fact, as it happens, the McKennas had reached out to me late last year, and when I was at Los Al for Starlet and Futurity, I saw Jerry in the paddock, and I asked them about it. And, you know, I was obviously doing the show from California, and I said, you want to talk about it? And he said, no, have the McKennas on. I mean, he shied away from the publicity. And, you know, I've been doing this show for 15 years, and anybody who has listened for any length of time, they've got a much better, Jay, I think, appreciation for him than those who either hear from him when he is reserved or shy. He, over the years on the show with me, he has gotten so talkative, and you know, the early visits that I would reach out to him after stake successes, they were torturous, and it took me a long time to get from whether it's me being comfortable or him being comfortable. And you know, then it got to the point where there were days I said, Jerry, I gotta go, and which, and people would say to me, oh my God, Hollendorfer, you know, you couldn't get him off the phone today. And that's really true. And it's one of the things to me that is just so just reprehensible is that they would single out 73-year-old Hall of Famer who they know is not media friendly and cuddly and struggles with this aspect of it. And the fact that only the HBPA and THA have, you know, spoken forcibly on his behalf, and you know, the individuals that have, you know, I saw some things from, well, I had McGreevy on, but I saw something on Facebook that was wonderful, you know, old friends of his that have been in horse racing their entire lives. There was so many different, more appropriate ways to handle this, and people may think that the incidents are a black eye for racing. This is a much worse black eye, and I would be alarmed that this kind of conduct is going on. Basically unchecked and unchallenged.
Well, that was one thing that Drew Cotu said to me the other day when we spoke Tuesday morning, was the potential precedent that this sets that other trainers or horsemen on this circuit should be wary of, is how this that someone could be denied without having a ruling against them. That was something that Drew Cotu spoke to, and that I quoted him on in the story that ran, was online on Tuesday and ended up in the Friday print edition.
Well, we will continue to address this and provide any forum for Hollendorfer and for Drew, and you know, will help in any way. I'm utterly disgusted by the whole situation. And then at the same time, we should certainly root for Dan Ward and for Don Chatlos, who have an opportunity. We had a conversation with Dan Ward, Jay, at Santa Anita in April, Hammer and I, and we asked him. I said, have you ever, at some point after his career with Bobby Frankel, had thought about going out on his own, and he said he's entertained it, and he thought that at some point he might. I mean, if this happens to be the occasion, I mean, it's not certainly the way Dan Ward would choose for it to be. And of course, Don Chatlos had success and has been working the last several years for Hollendorfer, and he knows what it takes to run a string. So we'll play this one, as it goes forward. Let's talk a little bit about the 3-year-old second half of the season, Jay, and the Haskell next week, and Jim Dandy not far off. We had Code of Honor with a terrific return, and the Indiana Derby, Ohio Derby, etc. Some thoughts from second half perspective.
Well, it's really kind of a jump ball in that division as we start the second half of the year, and I'm really looking forward tomorrow to seeing Game Winner get back in action. I thought he ran two good races going into the Derby. I thought you could make an argument that he ran a terrific race in the Kentucky Derby. The one thing we found out that day is he could handle the Belmont distance of a mile and a half, because that's about how wide he was. And he's been off since then. He's been training spectacularly at Santa Anita. And he's going to use tomorrow's race, in which he's going to be a prohibitive favorite against three overmatched rivals. He'll use that as a prep to move on towards the Traverse Stakes, much like the Baffert-trained Gary and Mary West-owned West Coast did en route to his 3-year-old title a couple of years ago. So he'll move on to the Traverse after tomorrow, assuming that he performs as he should. And the Travers is going to be a pivotal race for the division, because you should get all the major contenders for the title in that race, including, as you mentioned, Code of Honor, who won quite nicely last week. You should get maximum security coming out of the Haskell. And King for a Day has certainly come forward in recent weeks. And then you've got Tacitus, who ran a giant race in the Belmont Stakes and is pointing for the Travers as well, and ran two very good races in the Triple Crown in both the Kentucky Derby and then the Belmont Stakes after skipping the Preakness. So it's a wide-open division right now, and my hope is that the major players all stay healthy over the next month and a half, and we see them all in the gate at the Travers, and that'll go a long way towards at least finding out who, as of the end of August, is the leader of the division.
Well, and I said to Shug on Wednesday, about the prospects for running the table, as it were, and at least on the 3-year-old front until the 3-year-olds meet elders, and resting a championship, and he said he'd love to, and he thinks that the horse entering this stage of the year is, aside from a classic win, has done kind of a nice resume building. So it's going to be a lot of fun, including next Saturday at Oceanport. Looking forward to being down there for a Saturday running of the Haskell.
Yeah, and a little bit earlier in the month than usual, too. So it'll give those horses a little better spacing, probably coming into the Travers. They'll have an extra week or two to work with, which trainers seem to prefer that kind of a schedule in this day and age.
Jay, speaking of scheduling, the start of Del Mar, you mentioned entries are going to be due, and maybe a little advance before we talk next week. Some feeling for the meet, the Pac Classic, and lots of great turf action. And I think this should lift everybody's spirits in California, I imagine.
Yeah, I think most people on the circuit are very eager to get down here and have hopefully what will be a successful meeting. It's always an exciting time of year. There's still a lot of uncertainty over some things out here. Obviously, what transpired on the circuit in previous months has impacted the horse population, and I know that owing to some of the struggles that in terms of race scheduling, even this past week at Los Alamitos, they had to abandon a potential card for Thursday and only are running 3 days. You know, Del Mar officials are understandably concerned about inventory. They want to run 5 days a week, and to that point, they've already announced that they're going to run fewer races per day so that they can run 5 days a week and have and put together a schedule. And I think they'll get off to an extremely strong start. I think you'll see very bullish activity. The looming Del Mar meet always impacts the last week of Los Alamitos, even in the best of times, because people just want to run at Del Mar. The purses are higher, and it's just I'm sure analogous to on your circuit. People would rather run opening week at Saratoga than the last week at Belmont Park, and it's just the nature of the beast on both circuits. So I think Del Mar will get off to an extremely strong start. The tough part might come the middle part of the meet, in that lull where it's maybe too soon for some of those horses that ran the first week or two of the meet to come back and run for the second time, which they will during maybe weeks 5, 6, and 7, but weeks maybe 3 and 4 might get a little bit challenging. The other aspect of it from a horse inventory standpoint is that from some of the trainers that I've spoken to for this 2-year-old story, it seems as though there have been a little bit of cutting back on numbers of 2-year-olds that ended up out here owing to the situation that transpired on this circuit in previous months. And so there's a good number of 2-year-olds out here, but maybe a little bit less for some trainers than they might have hoped, that their orders weren't quite as full as they were hoping, because some horses ended up, owing to owners just concerned over what was transpiring out here, made decisions to send the horses onto a different circuit. That happened in some specific cases from some of the trainers that I've told. There are other trainers, though, whose numbers continue to be very, very strong. And it's the usual, you know, cast of characters in that regard. And I'll have, like I said, that story will be out on Monday with some names of horses that are... I try to focus on horses who haven't run yet and give you sort of a guide on ones to follow that are expected to run at the meet, and hopefully a good bulk of them early on in the meet, so you can hopefully get some, you know, follow some ones early on and see how they pan out. And there have already been a few that have run on the circuit already that have shown quite a bit of promise at San Anita and Los Alamitos, a couple in particular that Simon Callahan has, and those will obviously be part of the story, but the main crux of the story is to try and give you some guidance on horses that you probably haven't even heard of yet and that'll be running during Del Mar. And that's always a high point of the meet, is just seeing the new faces that turn up, because a lot of them go on and do very, very good, very, very good things. And the other aspect of it will be moving towards the Pacific Classic or even the San Diego, the first weekend of the meet. I thought Catalina Cruiser came back so well at Belmont, and it'll be fun to see him back in action. And you've got Gift Box here for the same connection, Sadler and the Ronis brothers. So they should have another. They're sitting on what looks like to be a good meet again. I don't know that they could emulate what they did last summer when they had Catalina Cruiser and Accelerate, but they're going to give it a good darn try, because they've got a really strong barn again.
Well, Jay, as you have famously almost, I don't know if you've trademarked it, but home game.
Home game.
Home game it is.
Nice to have a home game.
Exactly. And spill right out of Carlsbad down to the shore. The best picture so far was Gary Young sending out that picture from his condo. Same crappy view. Made me laugh. the surf pounding the rocks. It was gorgeous. Jay, have a tremendous week. I get kicked off, and we'll talk next week.
Yeah, maybe we'll talk on opening day. We can go over some of those two-year-olds.
Yes, yes. Let's do that.
Perfect. All right, well, have a good weekend.
Thank you, Jay. DRF Privman, everybody. Last break. Let's take it and come right back and close out with Nick Tamaro, NTAM, NTAM1215. We'll get a couple of plays from Nick. That'll be a good way to go into this first weekend of Saratoga. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
All right, carry the four plus this, I got that. All right. 26,876. What's that? That's how many races you could have bet last summer on ExpressBet. Haven't signed up for an account yet? What are you waiting for? On top of all those races, ExpressBet's giving away 25 million XB rewards points with promotions at Saratoga, Del Mar, and more. Plus, ExpressBet's Fun in the Sun Handicapping Tournament features $120,000 in prizes, including seats to the 2020 Pegasus Betting Championship. I know, I'm throwing a lot of numbers at you here, but here's one more. 500. That's the sign-up bonus you could get when you sign up for ExpressBet. So let's recap. 26,000 races, $500 sign-up bonus, $120,000 handicapping tournament, and 25 million rewards points. Hey, this math just adds up. ExpressBet is your way to play this summer. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states. Open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. Racelens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats Racelens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, exactly 15 to noon, as the first full weekend, first few days of Saratoga 2019, and our first Saratoga conversation with Nick Tamaro. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How you doing?
Excellent. Looking forward to the day, the weekend, and really kind of getting the meet in full swing, and also, frankly, excited about what the Monday Tuesday is going to be like, the 2 days. We'll be doing a show, obviously, we're gonna see how people scatter to the winds and what they discover in and around Saratoga that doesn't involve the racetrack.
It is interesting. You know, I was thinking about it. I had a friend text me yesterday. This is the third Saratoga meet where I've not been a public handicapper, and I have to say, and this is with complete respect and fondness for everybody that does handicap publicly, I don't miss it. I don't envy them, but I do know that this will make their lives easier, no doubt about it. It's a grind, and those having to just
suffer the indignity. Now, of course, if you're a raging lunatic like Andy Serling and you handicap on draw day, when it's Saturday night or even Sunday morning and you're finishing up the Monday card, knowing that the daunting task of getting started on Wednesday looms shortly thereafter, you're ready to just sort of surrender. So I think it'll be good. It should certainly help the people. It should help the equines. We can hope that maybe over the course of the next week or so, the rest of the outfits from Kentucky that were headed up get there and help fill the empty stalls and whatnot to make sure that we've got a good program, because I know that we've still got 36 days to go, roughly, after this weekend. So, yeah, I think it'll be interesting. And there's also a lot to do. I mean, I don't need to start a commercial on upstate New York, but there's a lot to do in and around Saratoga that people who are there for the meet will experience now on Mondays and Mondays where there's no race. So get out there and do it. I mean, I've gone as far north as Scroon Lake. I know there's much, much more to see beyond that. But, of course, the boyhood home of the one and only Travis Stone, there's plenty to do up there and beyond. So, yeah, I think a lot of opportunities for fun.
Well, and I'm going to try to, send out missives and suggestions. And since you headed in the northerly direction, Lake Placid is 2 hours away, and is, if you've never been, it's not limited to winter sports. A trip to Lake Placid is fabulous, and it's actually got a thriving restaurant scene. There's some very sophisticated chefs up there. And then if you want to keep going, a reminder, if you're coming and you're going to spend, a couple of weeks, bring your passport. You're 3 hours from Montreal. And can enjoy Montreal, after the race is Sunday, go up and spend Monday, Tuesday in Montreal. I'm going to push that, and I better hear back from some people that do it. You'll be thrilled. If you come from other parts of the country, you're as close as, great proximity. So there's an option. And then we'll give you plenty of ideas, out here in Washington County and Cooperstown. For those who've never been, to the Baseball Hall of Fame, you name it. There's all kinds of things. We'll make sure that everybody's got a full slate. Let's turn our attention to the action. And before we talk, what lies ahead today and tomorrow, Nick, an idea about any learning, key learning from yesterday that you came away with?
Boy, what a difficult day just in terms of analysis, performance-wise and speed figure-wise with the changing weather conditions and whatnot. No, I mean, I think we saw a weak New York bred two-year-old race, which we kind of feared that would be the case going in, and I don't expect anybody in there will be a Maid of the Mist winner down the line. And I think that we saw about usually what the Schuylerville is. And the Schuylerville being a week earlier, really 8 days earlier than it was a year ago, is going to make it a more limited spot. It was a good field going in. I don't think the horses in it ran poorly yesterday at all, but it we'll have to wait and see a little bit more from all of them. I thought that Comical and Kiss the Girl probably are both horses that will continue to move forward. And I think that Chippy may have been hurt by having to spend a big chunk of that final quarter mile on the inside. So that was, I think, about all you could take from it. The riding performance of Joel Rosario throughout the day, including in his stakes win on Listing in the quick call, watch out. And people who follow me on Twitter who suffer through that will know that I occasionally, probably more often than I should, will point out when Joel does something that isn't quite expected or particularly wise. But he does a lot of good things, and he's my favorite rider, so I feel like I can complain, damn it. So, I've done nothing. I've praised him plenty, and his ride aboard Listing and some of his rides throughout the day were excellent. They were very, very, very good, and so we'll see if he continues to do that. I know he's going out west for one mount tomorrow, but it was an 86 for Comical in the Schuylerville. I neglected to notice that this morning, so it's real solid. Yeah, and I'm sure you tweeted it, so difficult figure to make, obviously, with the weather coming through at that point in time, but, it felt like a pretty game performance. They look like they're probably quite a bit better than everybody else in there, so hopefully we'll get a couple in the spinaway and maybe one in the Adirondack and go from there.
Well, it's pretty funny to, because I haven't put it up at Derby Trail, but I do the buyer, I keep track of the buyer figures, all the stakes and notable maiden races. It's pretty funny to see Saratoga, Schuylerville Quick Call, and see Doug O'Neill and Ben Cecil as the winning trainers. It's wait a minute, is this Del Mar or is this Saratoga?
It's it's a good thing to see. It's not a good thing to see if you're necessarily a California racing fan, but it's a good thing for everybody that follows New York racing and knows that there's a huge opportunity there for everybody that wants to try it. The dirt ranks are not what they were necessarily, and that's just because the world has shifted towards turf racing. New York racing in the summer has shifted towards turf. There's good field size. Bettors like it, but there's a huge opportunity on dirt, no doubt about it. And that was those were, and of course one of, was on turf, but an astute placement by O'Neill of both of his horses, and he certainly nearly got the exacta, but got all the money.
Nick, I don't know if you heard earlier with Mike Beer, but I let Mike kind of riff on his approach, and he said he's actually changed up a little bit of his Saratoga style play-wise. Give everybody a quick primer before we pick a couple of spots.
You know, stay out of the pools that you can't afford. That's the big thing. And looking at the early pick five yesterday, it paid well, mainly because of the fifth winner. And that was a sequence where, as you're going through, you know, you need to just be careful about situations like Psyoff and Local Hero, where, like me, you may try and be overly creative there and end up using more horses than you need, and you end up spending more than you need. Remember also that Saratoga is a long meet, and you probably can't make your meet in the first week, but you can come pretty damn close to ruining it. So just be careful about what bankroll you have and use it as wisely as you possibly can. If you're an exacta player, then stick to that, but don't find yourself spreading so deep that you really negate the good scores that you have by the investment that you've made. If you're mainly a pick five player, give the pick four some consideration. I know it's at a higher takeout and price point, but it might be something that you can afford a little bit better. Because everything pays better at Saratoga. It's the races are more competitive. There are obviously more win candidates in there. The odds are not usually stacked against a number of long shots. So just be very, very prudent as much as you possibly can. And don't start chasing it early because this thing is a marathon, not a sprint. The best meet that I've had betting at Saratoga was 2016. And I didn't really make the first score of really any appreciable note that year until closing weekend. So it's just one where you have to be patient. You have to watch as many races as possible. Take as many notes as you can. Really try and stay on top of things. Listen to the people whose opinion you value, and pool all that together to get where you want to go.
And I'll only add this very quickly because we're going to get short on time. Do not be one of those that throws up your hands when we're off the turf or when there's iffy days like yesterday. The carrying on and the teeth gnashing and the machinations over the weather yesterday and when this rain was going to come was just ridiculous. Worry about horses that you're going to pick and tickets you're going to use and stop, you know, worrying about it. Everybody was so convinced that it was going to be a washout and the rain that was supposed to come at one never came. And so the first half of the card was unencumbered. And then really we only had, you know, the wet track for the stakes race and the off the turf. And okay, yes, the race got taken off the turf and we got the all button, you know, for pick four, pick three, etc. But pick five, that's going to happen. And you, I would think people would understand that by now, but they don't. And the other thing, the racing isn't ruined because four races are off the turf today. And you're being an absolute moron if you take that approach. And I'll even put up the tickets I had from that day when I made 10,000 plus on a complete washout day, the day that Captain Candyman Can broke his maiden. I do not be one of those people.
Yeah, no, I'm a mutter, so I actually like it when I don't mind it at all. I shouldn't say I don't mind it at all when they're off the turf. And there is this obsession with the weather and whatnot. And you know, you see people on social media all the time talking about you can't say something about a nice turf race coming up without someone coming on and saying, well, you know, there's a 40% chance of rain, so it might be off the turf. I just will never understand the fascination with it, but it is something we're treated to for now 8 weeks up at Saratoga. But yeah, don't be dissuaded by days where they're off the turf. And take the approach that I do, which is that there are really real chances for value off the turf that just don't exist any other way. And I mean, there are going to be times where horses go off 3-1 that probably should be 6-5, because people are going to bet those races almost as if they think they're still on the turf. So don't throw your racing form away when it looks like some weather has come through, and especially a day like today where it's going to be a fast dirt track, so it should be a normal type of surface. And if you can go through the PPs and find which horses don't mind running on dirt, then you can make some money.
Well, and in fact, the sixth race scratched to 7. The seventh race has 8, and the nightcap has 6. And, not what we want and not ideal, but there's viable alternatives in the middle of the late action today. You've got that Forbidden Apple that I think is a tremendous betting race. And I speaking of betting race, what are you doing in there?
You know what? I'm actually going to make one of my bigger plays of the first half in there on Curbon. I think that this is exactly the situation for him. The mile, the race that he ran last time. That's where I want to go. It seems as if it's kind of been. Things have been a little tough for him at the extended distances. I just think the mile hits him between the eyes, and my hope is that there's enough pace in front of him, which there should be. I would imagine that Gidou will not really allow Voodoo Song to have things his way on the front end, and if that happens, then the setup should be there for the guys from off the pace, and if I can get anything close to 5-1 or so on Curbon, I know the morning line has him at 6-1, then I'm all aboard.
I love it. All right, a couple of Saturday plays.
I obviously want to touch on the Diana just because it's a feature. There's really not much from a betting perspective. I think all of us that are fans are going to love to see Rushing Fall take on Sister Charlie. I think Rushing Fall has a huge recency edge and is probably going to be pretty tough to beat. The Sanford came up dramatically weaker than the Schuylerville did, and I think that says more about the Schuylerville field necessarily than it does the Sanford field. And I think you're probably going to be left with a situation where you're taking mainly either Raging Whiskey or Cucina, but I also don't really want to sell By Your Side short because I thought he was a pretty impressive winner on debut at Churchill. So I think it's an early pick 5 where you'll probably be trying all of those. The 2-year-old race is one where I think experience might end up winning out. And Zeramid will just end up being a little bit better than these because he has a race under his belt. It's interesting. Steve Asmussen won 5 races with 2-year-olds from his first 10 starters in 2018, and then he lost with 15 in a row. So generally he's going to have them ready to go. This is a horse that went off 2-5 in his debut. So there obviously word was out that he was pretty talented. He actually lost to a stablemate. Second-time starters had been Asmussen's thing for a long time. So if it's not Zeramid, then I think it would probably most people will gravitate towards High Tide. I would think that Hometown Pride, being kind of the local hopeful, I guess, for Mary Lou, will get some support as well. And those were, I think, the main spots. I've got a couple that I'm interested in throughout the card. I'm going to see what kind of situation you have price-wise. But I think it'll be one of, obviously, it's onward and upward from here.
No doubt about it, and we'll check in weekly with Nick and with Mike Beer and other terrific opinions for Saratoga and beyond as the summer unfolds. Nick, thanks so much.
Thank you, my friend. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. And Tam, 1215. Everybody loves Nick. It is late position today, late in the show. It worked out all right. We didn't get to Ed. I apologize, but Ed... Scully hadn't been on in a month, so I'm sure Ed understands. And let's be honest. You can find Ed DeRosa, anywhere. He's everywhere. Come on. He's like kudzu. Who was on today? Rich Migliori, right? We had Mig with the surprise visit. Rich Glazer, Delaware Park. Marcus Hirsch. Scully, Jay Privman, I'm missing somebody. Deja, who else? Who was in there? Who was in the middle? Marcus? Mike Beer. Mike Beer. What the hell's wrong with me? There you go. Have a great weekend. I've got the selections up. I got to do the multi-race ideas. I had to wait until the scratches and a little bit of a headache, but it'll be worth it. That's the idea, right? HRRN coverage this weekend, of course. here on SiriusXM, including today, starting at 3. Best of luck. Talk to you Monday at the races.